Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, the Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live through Blog Talk Radio, as well as YouTube and iTunes and a whole bunch of other video platforms and audio platforms, and especially on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host and founder of the Caregiver Space, Adrian Gruberg. Today we're going to be interviewing Paul Becker, who served 30 years in peace, crisis, and combat. And he's just an amazing individual. I'm going to have him introduce himself. You will not want to miss this show. I'm your host, as I said, Dave Nassani, and this show is caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial. That kind of describes your wife, doesn't it, Paul?
It does, Dave.
But they have this tiny little problem. They're very prone to burnout because they care for us so much, too much. They tend to put everyone else's needs above their own, and that's why 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do, and 60% become hospitalized needing a caregiver of their own. Now, that's a pretty sad situation. Now, we can learn something from the airlines who tell us in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with your mask. What an amazing metaphor for all of life. Take care of you first. Not out of survival, but not out of selfishness, but out of survival. You know, caregivers think selfish is a dirty word, and it's not for them. They need to be a little more selfish and have that word in their vocabulary, because they're so far over to the side. We've got to get that pendulum back into the balance part of it. Now, there are people who will actually get stuck in the grief process. You know, it could take days or weeks or months or years, or some people never get out of it, and that's not a good place to be. Unfortunately, there's only one way to get out of the grief process, and that's to go through it. You can't avoid it. You can't go under it or over it or around it. You got to go through it. Sorry, didn't write the rules. But hopefully we can help you through your loss and your grief. If you feel like you're stuck, spend 5 years or whatever, 1 year, however long you want to grieve and then move on with your life, you need help, and we're here to help you. And I do want to take this time to thank my last week's guest, Jim Dowda, who is a registered nurse, and it was a great show. And I want to remind you that all those shows are on all those platforms I mentioned and our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And this show will be as well, so tune in and check it out. And while you're there, take our short quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a copy of my first book talking about how to overcome unbelievable hardships. It's our life story. We know about unbelievable hardships. And it's an ebook form. And do it. Do it. But enough of me. All right. Let's welcome our wonderful guest, Paul Becker. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you, Dave. And Adrian.
So you're in Virginia, not too far from Adrian over there in Manhattan. And I'm going to be in Manhattan in about a month or so. We're going to be in Times Square. Our picture is going to be on the Jumbotron. We're going to be speaking at NASDAQ. And we're going to be meeting with 100 producers from national producers. So say a little prayer for us that our pitch gets taken by a Dr. Oz or a Dr. Phil or someplace where we can get national attention, because we want people to know that caregivers are dying and something needs to be done about it, by golly. And, Paul, maybe later on I want you to tell me you've got some of your own ideas about what we should do with the healthcare system if you were in charge. So let's not forget to do that in the last half of our show. So why don't you take a minute? Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? I like to ask, who is Paul Becker, and why were you put on this earth?
Dave, I'll find out in the long run, right? I think it's pretentious, to give that answer at only 57 years old. You know, I may be, closer to the end than the beginning based on normal life expectancy.
God, you look like you're 40. I guess the military agreed with you.
Well, faith, fitness, and family.
Faith, fitness, and family.
Right? Why am I here? Well, when I was in uniform, I was here to serve our nation, to uphold the country that gives us the freedoms to allow us to do what we like. And all four of my grandparents were immigrants, and I felt I had skin in the game to join and defend what they strove to come for, the American ideal. Now that I'm out of uniform and I've endured some extraordinary medical hardships along the way, I'm passionate about improving quality of care to patients and improving the patient experience for both patients and the caregiver. They're an inseparable team. And I spent most of 2015 in hospitals with my wife Kim by my side every step of the way. So I offer that perspective.
You were on the receiving end.
Look forward to exploring it. Yeah.
You were on the receiving end of your care. Tell us what you went through in the hospital when all that was happening to you. And by the way, can you still fit into those pants?
Yeah. You know, the military's been good about that over the years. You know, they really don't pay us enough on military salary to keep buying new clothes. So
or to
you
eat
generally
well.
Like to fit into the ones that you invest in a little early. Thanks. I had a pain in my knee. I've always been an athlete. I had run the Honolulu Marathon just the year before when I was stationed in Hawaii. Wow. And it was more than the usual Motrin and Tylenol would cover.
Mm-hmm.
So after some strong insistence from my wife, Kim, I got an MRI on the knee. And I thought I might have a torn meniscus or so after 3 decades of running. And the doctor explained to me on the readout that I did, in fact, have a torn meniscus, but he was more concerned with this big gray area that was covering my right femur, which is a pretty unusual spot to see a gray shadow on an X-ray or MRI. So we had a biopsy done on December 21st. I was informed that it was cancerous, and I'd run a gamut of intense tests for the next 48 hours to find out exactly what type of cancer I had. On December 23rd of 2014, I was told that I had stage 4 bone marrow cancer.
Oh my.
Now, in a country that typically scales everything 1 through 10, right, from Letterman's list to Bo Derek's movie to our number of digits, I thought, well, that's plenty of maneuver room. I have 6 stages to go. I'm glad we found it early. Then the doctors explained to me that, Admiral, there is no stage 5, which is a very, very sobering sentence. Wow. When I asked the doctors where else was the cancer after some really exquisite testing that was done, PET scans and all types of other systems. The doctors told me it would be easier to tell me where the cancer was not at this point than where it was. But the situation was grim, right? The outcome was in doubt. The doctors couldn't assure me that they could save the leg at this point, but we'd go into surgery at the earliest opportunity to try and do that, and then get after the rest of the body. I had surgery. The plasmacytoma, or the tumor, was successfully removed. The leg was saved. Shortly after that, yeah, thank God. I was on a mixture of novel agents and chemotherapies to try and bring myself into a remission status. that worked. So I went through high dose chemotherapy, a stem cell transplant. Along the way, I had one relapse. And ultimately, on the back end of all of this, I came out of the hospital in late 2015 in a stable remission, and I've been there since. Right? The Navy was very kind in that they offered me the opportunity for more rank and more positions, and it just was the perfect moment for me to consider slowing down, hanging up my uniform, and let someone else become an admiral, because I wasn't always an admiral, and I can remember when I was a captain, we'd always be waiting for admirals to retire. So someone else could move up. So I saw this as the perfect opportunity to take care of myself, spend more time with my wife. Everyone leaves the military at some point, and if you ever needed a signal that this was the time to leave, that was it.
Sure. Did you lose your hair with the chemo?
Absolutely. I was down to skin in a lot of places there.
Well, for your age, you've got a pretty good head of hair now.
It came back nice and thick.
I'm waiting for mine to come back, but no.
After getting a haircut every 2 weeks for about the last 37 years, I enjoy now letting it slip to every 6 weeks or so.
Wow. And any questions, Adrian? That's an incredible.
No, I'm listening intently.
That is an incredible story. So let me ask you, how were you doing during that whole process, Paul? What were you thinking? I mean, where was your faith then, before, during, and after? I assume your faith got you through this.
Yes, but there was more to it than faith, right? Mm-hmm. I mentioned faith, family, and friends. I'm Jewish. Whenever I wanted access to a rabbi, I'd have one, mm-hmm. but I didn't feel I needed a rabbi, you know, to lead me in prayer. I felt secure in my communications with God. Uh-huh. So there was a never-ending stream of chaplain friends, active and retired, that I'd met over the year that would lead me in prayer, join me in prayer, and I'm a big believer in faith helping me and my wife out along the way. Mm-hmm. That's the faith part. Family. My immediate family is Kim. Sadly, my father passed while I was undergoing stem cell transplant, as if things couldn't get worse, right? When you're under the effect of high-dose chemotherapy and hitched to more machines than you care to be, and you get news that your father's passed away.
So you weren't able to be with him.
Bottom. Of your trough, right? I'll use a nautical reference, right? But we consider our family a wide expanse that includes friends. I have three brothers. They are actively engaged in helping keep up my spirits. And the Navy is a family more than a bunch of friends, I'd say. And they never left my side throughout.
Oh, great.
So
great.
That's faith, family, friends.
Okay, don't go away, and we will be right back. Good time for a break. Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. We'll help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com. And we're back with Paul Becker and my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg. And Let me ask you, Paul, how did the military life prepare you for a health crisis? I can't even imagine what you went through, but you already shared how your family helped and how your faith helped. How did the military help you?
I'm very mission-oriented, and when I was faced with extreme adversity, and I've been faced with it professionally, not medically in the past, I had a frame of mind that we will accomplish this mission. Okay, it's just a matter of how we're going to do it.
That's amazing.
And
That's the attitude you have when you go into war. We're not going into a war unless we can win. And by golly, this is a war, and I'm going to win.
yeah, I
Great
can't.
attitude.
This is a fight. I treated my cancer, right? Multiple myeloma or bone marrow cancer, more commonly known. This was the enemy. I needed, as an intelligence professional, to learn everything I could about this enemy. I needed to
How did you do
understand its
that?
strategy,
How
its
did you do that?
operations, its tactics. Well, I erroneously started, like so many people do, by going to WebMD. And the answers must be there, but that is not the right place to go. And although there's some good information there, right? You know, when you have spare time, you start looking through the World Wide Web of multiple myeloma and outcomes and individual stories, and you get lost, right, in a sea of people's troubles, maybe some solutions. But how I really focused my search, right, and had deep understanding of the adversary or a center of gravity analysis, you know, of what the enemy was up to, right, in military terms. I worked with my doctors, hematologists, oncologists, orthopedic surgeons, the Myeloma Research Foundation, the International Myeloma Fund, authoritative sources, right,
Yes.
who could focus my efforts to understand what I was facing, right, and not just have a shotgun effect, right? It was more of a rifled round that came right in on the key node of what I was after. And this was extremely valuable because in this way, I could listen to others, read, learn, and then participate in a meaningful dialogue with my providers and my caregiver to talk about specific instances on if this, then this. You know, while I'm undergoing treatment, you know, Kim would do the same. She would join me, teammate, teamwork, right? And we were tenacious in figuring out what needed to be understood. She would participate in just as much of the dialogue to say, all right, when he's incapacitated, if he's incapacitated, right? You know, where do we go? And everything from the mundane of hospital administrative forms, right, which is a big part of an illness, you know, nowadays, to big ticket items such as, well, if this high dose cytoxin and pomalidomide chemotherapy doesn't work, what is the cooling off period, and can we join another trial to try something equally as aggressive, right? So it was a meaningful two-way discussion with our caregivers, and that way we felt empowered, right, as a patient and a caregiver team to talk with providers. So that's that military mindset of attacking the enemy's strategy, not just their forces, right? It's understanding how cancer works, and then going after it with some precision medicine, to having an inclusive dialogue of a group of strategists to plot a course of action that ultimately proved successful.
That's ingenious. How impressed were your doctors on your attitude?
Yeah, this is a bit pretentious, right? You know, to say, but they were blown away, right? They would often say, we've never had a patient either pronounce correctly what you just told us, you know, about some obscure case in your diagnosis, or, you know, that even as you're laying there with tubes in you, you know, you're coming up with questions that made us had to think, compared to their usual, well, we can do A or B, which do you choose? A patient usually opts for one or the other and doesn't ask to, well, let's consider a third option here, because I've read about a trial that's underway at the National Institute of Health. And, you know, does that have any meaning for where I am? And
that, imagine and that.
And continues and to my aftercare, Dave, where the doctors, right, this is a journey, not a destination. It's a hackneyed expression, I know, but listen, I'm still on low-dose maintenance chemotherapy treatment 3 times a month for the rest of my life until someone wins the Nobel Prize for cancer. I have a treatment tomorrow. Wednesday is my typical treatment day, where I'll go to Bethesda Naval Hospital, now known as the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, and I'll get my treatment and a new subscription of 3 weeks' worth of low-dose thalidomide-based pills, which are real cancer killers, and they still have side effects. The doctors can't tell me about other patients that may have a similar condition to my own, but they ask me routinely, can I give your information, Paul, to another patient who has a similar situation? And Kim and I readily share with them. So I'm often known on email or phone calls, hey, are you the Admiral guy with cancer? yes, is that, how can I help you? So in that regard, I'm not a physical caregiver to them, but I want to keep giving back to others to benefit from our experiences. And the well is never too deep for me to go down there and spend as much time and talk and listen and visit with them along the way.
So your cancer has already started helping others with cancer, maybe pursue options that they would not have considered, that options that even the doctors hadn't considered. And can you imagine an admiral showing up for a war and couldn't pronounce the enemy's name? I mean, duh. And they were surprised. Oh, my gosh, you know how to pronounce that. Well, yes, I'm an admiral.
I wanted to know whether or not they gave you a prognosis once they told you you had stage 4.
Yeah, what were the odds they were giving you?
The doctors very deliberately don't try and put some hard metrics on it.
But you wanted the numbers, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, everyone does. You know, it's not that black and white. I understand the doctor's perspective, but let me.
That just means the numbers are bad. That's what
they
that
are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're getting better all the time, and in fact, the medicines I'm on now weren't even invented 12 years ago.
No.
Right. So there's no track history to show for patients who are on my treatment regime what is the long-term prognosis, because everyone's still in the middle of their treatment. But back to your question, Adrian. For someone with my cytogenic profile, right, the way my chromosomes manifested itself and the other symptoms that were displayed, 5 to 7 years was the normal life expectancy from diagnosis. But again, that I don't use that as a hard number, and the doctor's cautious not to use it as same, because the numbers aren't in for my combo of therapies on where that will lead us.
Okay. What were you going to say, Adrian?
I just wanted to know, was your stem cell transplant from one of your brothers?
No, mine was called an autologous stem cell transplant, where this is amazing medicine, right? They'll harvest your own.
Mm-hmm.
They'll put it in a cryogenic freezer. Then they'll introduce high-dose chemotherapy, which knocks out your, you know, every one of your neutrophils, right? You become neutropenic. You're completely susceptible to infection. And then they warm up your frozen, treated bone marrow, reintroduce it, and it's a bit of a reboot. And as a matter of fact, a lot of stem cell transfer patients consider the reintroduction their second birthday, right? So I remember what day mine happened to be. I don't fix on it, right? To me, it's just another day. Other people have a different perspective on that, but maybe it's because I was looking down the road already and I knew what the outcome would be. I just had to work my way back to find it.
Well, listen, we're running out of time. Let's take our break and then we'll come back. And I want you to talk about what you would do to change the healthcare industry, because you sound like you got some good ideas on everything, because you just look at things in a new and different way, which is government needs that because they're like in a rut. So we'll be right back. Don't go away. Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps ranging from denial. I don't believe this is happening. Anger. Oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening. To a form of bargaining. How can I get out of this? To depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Paul Becker and my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg. So, Admiral Becker, explain to me, sir, how you would change, how would you fix this broken medical institution?
Yeah, that's such a big issue. It's the right issue to address. And I won't fluff you and tell you I have the right answer. But I have some thoughts that hopefully would contribute to improving the patient quality of care and the patient experience, right? And this is in the hospital's interest as well, because patients have their own network, right? Their own verbal network, friendly network, social network. And hospitals are in a competition for patient services, you know, just like any other transaction. And if their quality of care isn't up there, patients will talk and patients will opt to go somewhere where they're treated more comprehensively and better. And I can't blame them. We do that as consumers, you know, and this is a good, it's a very important good for health. It's the most important good. So doctors are exceptionally bright and skilled. My experience is they often live in their own silos of excellence. You know, picture a big farm with all these silos next to each other, and one's for grain, and one's for oats, and one's for corn, and one's for, you know, sorghum. They're not all connected.
right? So I think hospitals, from an organizational perspective, need to carve out some time of their highly skilled doctors' days to give them some bonus teamwork, tone, tenacity, leadership training for their healthcare professionals. And I realize there's a trade-off that they may spend a little less time doing something else. But in the long run, if they don't invest in this comprehensive team-based approach to listening from their peers and sharing information widely, openly, right? Not just on a computer or in a collaborative workspace environment, that at worst, things will fall through the crack, right? And the patient won't receive the best comprehensive medicine. But more importantly, that the patient caregiver team, right? I'm going to make an assumption that most patients have a caregiver bedside. Even if you're outpatient, that most patients come in with a caregiver to receive. You never want to hear, oh, I wasn't aware my colleague had, you know, done this or had mentioned that, right? Mm-hmm. If they're not collaborating and teaming and throwing away a bit of ego, right, to bring in some other comprehensive solutions, I think the patient doesn't feel the solutions are being optimized. Mm. For doctors themselves, right, that's a broad scheme. For doctors themselves, Dave, it made a difference to me that one of my doctors sat down when he came in to talk to me during a particularly tough stretch. You know how busy they are? Clipboards, yeah. Lab coats, different levels of subordinates and trainees, you know, following in trail. They call it making their rounds or rounding. And they're busy and I get it. But one of my doctors sat down and looked me in the eye and talked to me.
Right.
And I asked my wife to keep a stopwatch on how much time he spent with me compared to the other doctors who made their rounds standing. The answer, after about four or five observations, the one sitting down actually spent less time with me than the others. But I felt he was paying me more attention, right? That he wasn't hurried and didn't even have a sit-down conversation. So there's a level of empathy there, you know, it's beyond sympathy, and communication with the caregiver patient team that'll make a world of difference. I would also have a very active daily opportunity for patients and caregivers to provide feedback to their ward or their hospital on what went right today or what went wrong. Because if you're in there for 3 weeks, you often forget either something positive or negative that happened some time ago, right? So whether it was a nurse who didn't put on her gloves, and I'm in a neutropenic state, right? And that's not good, right? And I mean her no harm and professional and all that, but I do want the situation corrected because I don't want to, you know, catch a mortal germ in this case. And I want her to be corrected, right? Not disciplined. There's a difference, right? So good leaders create memories. And you generally think, it's a positive memory that when I left, I gave this person a challenge coin and a letter of recommendation and, you know, I like it. But memories can be, wow, this guy was quick to correct my deficiencies professionally, right? Constructively, friendly. Yeah. So a rapid feedback mechanism, and these are small inputs that have tremendous cascading effects, right? We say in the Navy, small leaks sink big ships, right? But so these small actions, I think, have large repercussions. And ask patients to come back and share their experience with those who will listen. I am a regular happily, right? This is pro bono work in the purest sense, with interns and medical students and patients and quality of care symposia at the medical military hospital, right? And it's embarrassing showing a picture of yourself in a a pretty awful state of disrepair, because in today's society, right, with Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest, you are always looking your best, right? On your photos. Well, I'm not looking my best. So for patience, accept your humility. You know, embrace that you were damaged at some point and don't hide it, right? It makes you stronger in the long run. I'm very proud to have triumphed over cancer. I don't lead off any professional or personal conversations that way. You'd become a very lonely person if you did, right? If you told your friends, hey, how you doing? I'm a cancer survivor. You just, what? You're nuts. I certainly wouldn't recommend telling it to an employer either. But those who read my LinkedIn profile or Facebook or website locations, they realize it's a part of my life. It's only made me stronger. And have a little more to build upon and experience to be empathetic with others about. I was very fortunate to be empathetic, have the opportunity to be empathetic with others, because the boss that I worked for when I was diagnosed was a throat cancer survivor. So I not only had someone who said, who understood the process of the journey I was about to undertake, but assured me that when I got better, could be 1 month, could be 1 year, there'd be a job there for me, right? And he could find someone to fill in the gap, and don't worry about all that, right? And he could share his perspective, and that's why, to make the healthcare system better, ask for volunteers of people who have recently triumphed to share. And I think most times, I don't have to put a metric on it, most times patients that have triumphed will share their story, either informally or formally, right, to help others move along.
Yeah.
So there's some contributions to the broader issue of fixing that.
I'm going to ask whether or not your wife, as part of this team, has given back. Does she talk to other caregivers and let them know how she was, you know, how you were successful?
Yes, Adrian is the answer. Last year, we gave several presentations to medical audiences where it was, the title of the presentation was called The Patient's Perspective, right? Because usually in the audience are people who are typically in lab coats and have clipboards, right? So they have a top-down perspective in improving quality of care, right? The patient's perspective comes from the bed up, right?
Right.
Part two of the same presentation, and now I'd like to introduce you to my wife and my caregiver, and Kim will come in and say, now for the rest of the story, right? And she has several graphics that are part of her presentation, and frankly, she delivers it with more emotion than I do, which really resonates with the audience. And listen, the military kind of has a gallows humor about illness and injury. It's a profession of arms, right? People get hurt in what we do, whether in training or real life. And as much as we may grieve, mission first, right? You move on. Kim's a military spouse, and has a little different perspective. So she joins the conversation with what she did and what she learned, right? And it goes from, okay, was the social worker, you know, an avenue of release for her? No. Right. It was offered at every opportunity, but that's just not how she clicks. We went to a caregiver group, which are wonderful venues. It's just not how we absorb information, right? And I'm happy to share my story, but I didn't want to go to the local firehouse every third Thursday of the month, right? Sit in folding chair circle and, you know, hey, what's new with you? But they know how to find me. And if anyone wants to meet me for a cup of coffee or talk on the phone, I'm on it. And so is Kim, right? And so we try to add value to others' experiences that way.
I'm glad to hear it.
That's awesome. That's amazing. What has been the follow-through or continuing actions you've taken since the health crisis?
Well, medically, I mentioned I'm in a complete remission at this point.
Thank God.
Right, so I still get 3 treatments a month, and I'm a regular with my oncology, hematology, and orthopedic team. I still have a contraption holding my leg together that the TSA loves to wave their wand over and figure out what is going on inside my right thigh, you know, and it's a little bit of bionics.
What are the side effects from this chemo that you're continuing to get?
Yeah, some fatigue is about it. I've weaned myself off of the other side effects. So that's a continuous process and going smooth. But it's a very complex field to keep track of new developments in big pharma and what's going on with treatments, right? Since mm-hmm. there's no cure, what's saving me are treatments, not a cure, right? I give blood once a month, and thank God so far so good. This year, for the first time, I'm going to go to the American Society of Hematologists annual convention. I think I've picked up enough of the lexicon, and I can participate and listen and learn, I hope, at a meaningful level with much more highly qualified doctors. I'm not even that, but with those highly qualified, so I can improve my game to either share with others or, God forbid, there's a relapse. Okay, I'm ready that way. And I also find writing therapeutic. You may have seen some of my articles on LinkedIn or other journals about leadership or embracing the fact that I've survived and triumphed over cancer. And hopefully that serves as an inspiration to others. So I spend some time trying to share and inspire.
Well, don't be surprised if they call you back to speak. If you so last question, and then we're out of time. If you have developed a special appreciation in your heart for caregivers, and I know you have, and what they go through on a daily basis, of course, share some of those thoughts about what's going on with that special relationship with you and caregivers in general, because I know you have a special one with your wife. Mm-hmm. I too am a caregiver to my wife, and it's different being a caregiver to your spouse because, it's just different. Trust me. So go ahead.
It's good for a caregiver and a patient to establish their rules of engagement early on. Where do you want to go, right? It's not having silos of excellence. It's just understanding what are each other's specialties. And then there's complete candor. At one point, Dave and Adrian, one of the doctors told me the outlook is grim. His words.
Grim,
right?
Grim.
That's not something you normally hear from a doctor.
Yeah, let's look that up.
And Kim and I hadn't anticipated hearing something like that. So we had a little fleur-de-lis maneuver of our reactions, right? We starbursting in different directions. And we hadn't considered it. So it's good for a caregiver and a patient to the degree they can, think through the best outcomes, think through the worst outcomes, and we call it war game. It's the inappropriate phrase here. But just plan a response. Conceptually, if we hear, it's an if-then exercise. If we hear this, then we as a team will do that. And there's a level of intimacy there that you can do more with a spouse, I think, than you could with, just a friend or, a coworker.
I found sharing was very important. Sharing feelings about what outcomes might bring, into your lives, and that not just shrugging them off, not just being afraid to talk about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and back to the social worker part. right? There were a couple times where the social worker would come visit when I was in with the room with Kim, and she would ask all the right questions in the best professional manner, Adrian. And how do you feel about that? Right? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just that I grew up in the Bronx and my dad was a cop, and I'm not comfortable talking in front of you, lady. As kind and as caring as she was, right? It's, but I did want to have that conversation with my wife.
Yeah.
Right.
So I accepted the framework, and then Kim and I would talk about it and be plenty candid, you know, mm-hmm. from, are you nuts? You know, to, yeah, of course, you know, how could we not, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for accepting this invitation on such short notice. I appreciate that. And if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how do they?
I have a website, Dave. Thanks for asking. And it's www.thebeckert3group.com. T3 in this case stands for teamwork, tone, tenacity. But that makes for a long title, right? So
yes.
thebeckert3group.com is my website, right? Yeah. My personal email is paul@thebeckert3group.com. I'm on Twitter, The Becker T3 Group. Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook, The Becker T3 Group. And I'm on LinkedIn, at The Becker T3 Group. So... easy to find that way, and I'm happy to share more with others.
As I would expect, being in the military, you've got all your bases covered. And for those of you who don't know, I met Paul, we shared the same stage at the Rockstar Marketing Boot Camp, where we both were learning a lot on marketing and just being a rock star. And you are a rock star, Mr. Becker.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, you, Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
It's Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. And
awesome.
Once you go, if you go to thecaregiverspace.org, you've got all the links, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. That's all there.
Thank you so much, guys, and thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And we will see you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.